expressed on the Buckmaster Radio program are not necessarily the views of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, or its sponsors.
Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you. John Couch, my buddy, engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. And together, we welcome you to the Buckmaster Show. We're in the Green Thing Zocalo Village studio on this Friday. Hope you're doing well. We are live, of course, Monday through Friday on the noon hour on 10:30. Tucson's voice for trusted news talk. Our media partners, thank you very much to our Friday shout out. Dylan Smith, who is on our live line already. Dylan, how are you?
Doing all right.
Thanks for your support. TucsonSentinel.com, Green Valley News, and Saharita Sun, the local Tucson media group, and its portfolio publications, including Inside Tucson Business, Tucson Weekly, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Our Friday Focus interview today, let's get right at it. Sheriff Mark Napier is with us. Sheriff, how are you?
Very well, Bill. If I could start by, I know my wife's listening, and we celebrated 37 years of marriage yesterday. So,
congratulations.
Honey, thank you for sticking with me for 37 years.
We have
four adult children, two grandchildren, two more on the way, honey, and thanks for a really wonderful 37 years.
And Dylan, I didn't give the full intro about you in case people don't know who you are. You're the editor and publisher of the now 10-year-old online news service called TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan's vice president of the Arizona Press Club, immediate past chair of Lion Publishers. That's an acronym, Lion, for local independent online news publishers. You want to wish the sheriff well, Dylan?
Absolutely. That's an impressive feat.
Well, yeah. Thank you, my friend. The impressive feat, Dylan, is that she stayed married to me for 37 years.
I wasn't giving you credit for this.
Okay, good enough.
All right.
We all know where that goes, right?
Yeah, we do.
Oh, Sheriff, we've got a ton of things to talk about. Let's begin with the pressing concerns of the Bighorn Fire. Boy, I'll tell you, this is a valiant group of 800 or so firefighters, many of them from all over the country. They've done a yeoman's job. They saved the northern foothills communities. So far, knock on wood, Summerhaven seems to be out of danger. Kudos to this group.
They're amazing, Bill. They really have done a great job. You know, in addition to the northern foothills, they also had that community on Golder Ranch.
Right.
Saved 78 homes there. And that was near and dear to my heart because my Sunday golf buddy, that was his house. And I was struck by the fact when I talked to Lou, he said they came, said we had to evacuate. I saw the fire was coming and I knew it was serious. And he said we could get whatever we could get in our pickup truck. And he says, when you close the door for your home for the last time, and you realize everything you left behind may not be there, right. And you, what do you take, what don't you take? He said it was really heart-wrenching. But they're doing a great job so far. Summerhaven seems to have been spared, but so much depends on wind direction and weather. But kudos to the fire folks. They're up, you know, in 100-degree heat. We've been battling this now for 2 weeks. And kudos to Lieutenant Dowdy, Lieutenant Payne, and the Pima County Sheriff's Department staff who've helped with these evacuations. We've been pumping news out to the community. I still believe the correct phone number is 351-FIRE, 351-FIRE for information. Also, look at the Pima County Sheriff's Department's Facebook page. We're pumping information out as it gets updated, which sometimes changes by the hour based on the weather.
Yeah, and I think the weather will be the big factor to see how long this thing will continue. Only 40% containment, and I believe in the past we've had fires that really will burn until the summer rains come.
Well, you know, the monsoon normally starts around July 4th, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. What I fear is that we're going to have dry lightning ahead of that, which we do some years.
Yep.
So what we really want are some just gully washer monsoons to knock this fire down, because it's going to be very hard for them to completely knock it down until we get to the rainy season.
Dylan, anything on the fire before we move on?
Well, I just wanted to ask, Sheriff, are you still having the problem with the looky-loos, the, you know, folks pulling over on the side of the road to watch the fire and getting in the way, or is that cleared up as the fire's sort of moved away, especially from the highway heading up to Oracle?
Yeah, Dylan, as the fire has become less visible from Oracle Road, we've had less problems with that. So the fire's kind of moved over again. So it's less visible from Oracle Road, but we still have a little bit of that. And I understand that people are curious, and this is a unique event. But when you pull over to the side of the road, you create traffic hazards and problems that we don't need additional problems right now.
There was a, what was that, last weekend? People were really getting in the way.
Yeah, we actually had some fire equipment collide with somebody.
Really?
So, yeah, we discourage that. We understand that people are curious, but coming into the area and creating congestion just does not help anything.
Hmm. And maybe you know. One more quick question on this, Bill. Have you had any problems with people this week flying drones and ending up grounding the planes and helicopters because of that, or have people gotten the message to stop that?
Well, I hope they've gotten the message, Dylan, because we actually had to ground the air stuff last week because of that. All air assets were grounded because somebody was flying a drone in the area. I have not heard anything more about that for about a week now, so I'm hoping that as the fires change, now it's up much higher than it was before, so I think that'll be less of a problem simply because of where the fire's at.
All right, we move on now to, three major topics for the sheriff today. We've covered a little bit of the fire. Let's talk now about the pandemic, a record number of cases, new cases today in Arizona, over 3,200. And I posted Dylan and Sheriff a few minutes ago that did a little research on this, Dylan, and about 25% of those 3,246 cases are people under the age of 44. That kind of surprised me. Did that surprise you, Dylan?
No, as we've been looking, especially over the past month and over the past few weeks, the largest group of people who are being diagnosed are people, 20 to 44 right now across the state. Out of the whole total, that's 20, almost 22,000 out of our 46,000 are in that age group.
Wow.
And another 5,000 are under 20 years old. So more than half of the people who are diagnosed in Arizona with COVID-19 are 44 or younger.
Sheriff, your thoughts?
Well, obviously, as the sheriff, the main concern that I have, of course, is the detention facility. And as you know, Bill, I brought Dr. Carmona on as a senior advisor to me very, very early in this process. What a gem that is for me to have somebody who's very familiar with Pima County, familiar with the sheriff's department, but also a public health expert to kind of guide my department on what we need to do to control it coming into the detention facility, how I can best take care of my employees. To date, we've had 7 positive tests of employees, and we have 2 people currently in the detention facility that came in with COVID. So we were able to isolate them before they got into general population. So literally, I'm knocking on wood. We've done very well. I think the demographic information is simply that young people are not as cautious as they should be, which is natural. I mean, they're that way in the way that they drive and a whole variety of behaviors. But COVID-19 is a very serious health condition. And while you might be 25 and say, well, that's okay because I'm otherwise healthy and I'm comfortable, I'll get a little sick and I'll be okay. But you could give it to somebody who is in a high-risk category.
Sure, of course.
And this hits close to home for me because my son-in-law, whom I love very much, has diabetes, puts mm-hmm. him definitely at a high-risk category. My oldest daughter is 36, and she's pregnant. And mm-hmm. that's a high-risk pregnancy under the best of circumstance. Marlene's a nurse, has been a nurse for 40 years. And my youngest daughter, Stephanie, is an emergency room nurse. And my youngest son, Travis, is a Tucson police officer. So we're most certainly taking this seriously. But we've got to listen to public health, get politics out of this, get the hype out of it, and listen to what the public health officials are saying, and practice good practices. The thing that we keep missing is we talk a lot about masks, and that is a factor, but we got to remember to wash our hands and avoid touching our faces. That is also a major contributor, and we need to remember that. Wash your hands frequently. It's harder than you think to avoid touching your face. I mean, we touch our face repeatedly without even being aware of it. But those are some factors we can take.
You just caught me doing it just now.
it's a thing, Dylan. I mean, unless you're actually paying attention, you do it all the time. And mm-hmm. rubbing one's eyes, touching your face, all those things, even if you're wearing a mask, you've now put yourself at significant risk. And then most certainly we need social distancing. which if you'd uttered that term 4 months ago, people would have looked at you as if you were crazy. I mean, that's how much society has changed in a short period.
Dylan, about masks, do you want to ask the sheriff anything?
Well, yeah, we've got an ordinance now, well, a proclamation now, which is soon to be an ordinance, very likely to pass at a city council meeting, Tucson City Council meeting this evening. Pima County is set to institute its own mask proclamation / ordinance this afternoon, almost certain to pass. How are you going to approach enforcing these?
Well, Dylan, as you might understand, first, that we have very limited resources to do any of that type of enforcement. We're busy every day doing normal Pima County Sheriff stuff, but we're going to approach in the same way that we did the business orders, as first as an educational thing. I think that may be built into what the Pima County Board of Supervisors is going to pass, is first an education posture. And I think that's the best way to approach it, is from an education standpoint. And people need to understand, I don't understand really the visceral reaction to wearing a mask when it's appropriate. You know, obviously, if you're out,
wear shoes, right?
Well, and for business owners, you most certainly can set the conditions under which you'll allow people in your business. We accepted no shirt, no shoes, no service for decades.
That's true.
So you can regulate your own property. Remember, we used to be able to smoke in restaurants.
Yeah.
We don't do that anymore. So this is going to be an adapting period. I don't foresee us taking any aggressive enforcement action at all. I don't think that'll be necessary, and I'd much rather approach it from an education standpoint.
What happens if you have a group of people or a business, especially on an ongoing basis, that just doesn't want to do this for whatever reasons they may have?
Well, business is a little bit different because they have a business license and becomes more of a public Pima County public health issue. And that's what we were doing with businesses that weren't compliant before, is referring them to Pima County public health, and then they can take action if they deem appropriate on the business license. But I guess maybe I'm not as skeptical of the people of Pima County. I believe that if we take an education posture, I believe that most people will be compliant and will be able to keep it in that vein.
All right. I'm going to take the break right here because I want to bring up the third major topic with the sheriff, and that is, of course, the movement across the country to take away funds from law enforcement. We had, speaking of Dr. Carmona, you mentioned him earlier in the program. He was with me on the program yesterday, and he's very concerned about this movement across the country. We'll hear from Sheriff Napier about his views on that. And Dylan Smith sticks around, and we'll take our break right here. It's Buckmaster on a Friday in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com. The Regional Transportation Authority and its member jurisdictions have completed more than 850 transportation projects or service improvements across the region to date. The RTA is a state-established political subdivision and taxing district. The RTA's current half-cent sales tax funds the 20-year plan through June 2026. And the RTA is laying the foundation to develop a new plan. To learn more, please visit www.rtanext.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show, our Friday Focus interview here in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Sheriff Mark Napier is with me, and on the live line is Dylan Smith from TucsonSentinel.com. Now, to another hot topic, and that is taking money away from law enforcement and diverting that fund to other things like social service agencies and such. Sheriff Napier, as I mentioned before the break, we had your colleague, Dr. Carmona, on the show yesterday. He's very concerned. I think anyone who saw what happened to Mr. Floyd was sickened.
Well, as you know, Bill, I've been in law enforcement for 38 years. I've never seen anything as clearly wrong and upsetting and just disgusting. I don't know how else to phrase it, as what I saw there. And people say, well, we need additional training, we need additional policies, de-escalation. No, I'm sorry. There's nothing in policy, nothing right about what happened. That was murder. It was callous. It was shocking to the conscience that anybody could act like that. And moreover, that people sworn to protect and serve the community could stand by and watch it and do nothing. I've never seen anything like that in my career that was so clearly egregiously wrong as that. And I'll tell you who's most mad about bad cops, good cops. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have a visceral reaction to this that I think actually transcends the community, because we know that the actions of an idiot, an imbecile in Minneapolis have clouded all of us. Now, I find that prejudice is always wrong and that bias is always wrong and stereotyping is always wrong. Discrimination is most certainly always wrong. And I think that most of the listeners would say, yeah, Sheriff, all those four things are wrong, and they're wrong. And I would say, are they wrong 100% of the time? And most people would say, yes, Sheriff, they are. Then I would submit they're wrong about police officers as well. You can't apply it about police officers and make it okay. I'm on the moral high ground here because I believe it's always wrong. It's always wrong, and we've all been painted with the same brush because of the actions of somebody in Minneapolis and some other unfortunate incidents, but there are brave men and women out there serving our community right now that don't have any of this in their heart or their performance.
What percentage are bad apples in the law enforcement field from your almost 40 years experience?
I would say that we're somewhere in the very, very low single digits, and I think that's borne out by, if you look at it pragmatically with empirical evidence of the number of contacts that law enforcement has every day with citizens in this country that do not result in any use of force, much less deadly force. The number of commendations, the number of life-saving events, which far transcend any deadly force events annually, the 503 law enforcement officers that lost their life in the last 3 years in the line of duty serving their communities. I think that empirical evidence and everything and based on my experience would say it's less than 5% that are bad apples. And then we've got to have, as law enforcement agency heads, the tools to get the bad apples out. And sometimes we're blocked in that a lot.
Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com.
Well, first, real quick, we should acknowledge that we are discussing this issue on Juneteenth, and there's a pretty serious movement to a push in Congress even to make that a national holiday, recognizing the legacy of our Black communities across the country and what they've had to endure. You're talking about bad apples. We should recall what the meaning of that metaphor is. It's not that bad apples are rare. It's that bad apples spoil the entire barrel. What is your reaction to that? Do you think that having a few bad cops here and there is the cost of doing business because of human nature, or do we need to fix that?
No, Dylan, please understand, I want to fix that. We don't want to have any bad apples, but in any segment of the population, whether you're speaking about any other group, any other segment of society, to say the bad apple would spoil the barrel wouldn't be tolerated, I don't think, about many other groups. You could argue that some protesters looted stores, therefore all protesters looted stores. I don't do that extrapolation. I want the bad apples out of the barrel. Make no mistake about that. But I wouldn't say that pollutes the entire barrel, because most of these young people that come into this profession most certainly aren't doing it to become rich. And I believe they have the heart of servants. They want to serve their communities, and they want to engage in something that would give their life purpose. So I'm concerned about the bad apples, but I don't think it colors the entire barrel.
Yeah. We should get back to the question that Bill raised more specifically about the idea of defunding, which for a small group of strident people is their goal. They basically want to eliminate policing, whether entirely or severely limit it. But I've heard a lot of complaints from cops over the past couple of decades about how they're being asked to do so many more things in addition to what they consider just being cops in tackling more social service issues. There are some people that take that, defund idea to mean reapportion that money into having more people whose specific jobs it is to be out in the community handling social service issues, and sometimes let cops be cops. Is that a reasonable suggestion?
Well, Dylan, you pose it almost like a dichotomous argument. I would say that we can do both. If I had more funding and I could hire people with social science degrees, people with degree in social service or psychology or something along those sociology, and put those people, marry those people, kind of the co-responder philosophy, and have those as partners with law enforcement rather than acting as autonomous agents in the community, because at some point we have to intersect, because some of these things do intersect law enforcement, traditional law enforcement roles, with an expanding community service role. So I don't think it's an either or in that respect, but I would welcome additional resources to try to get a co-responder type program, or to provide additional training to a subset of my personnel to address these things. Because you're right, the role of law enforcement has expanded significantly since I started in 1981.
How about reforms for your department? Do you have some in the works?
I think we're going to be publishing some things here in the next week or so. I literally sat up all night one night thinking about discussions I've had with the White House, with state, local, and national political leaders, with my peers on a state and local and even a national level about what can we do to answer community concerns. And I think we're going to be doing some very exciting things at the Sheriff's Department over the next couple of weeks. And we'll be sending out some information on that. But I think there's some silver linings to all of this, is a kind of a wake-up call to look at what we're doing and see where we can engage in some meaningful pragmatic and sustainable reform efforts.
Generally, what will those reforms be in what areas? Could you kind of give us a tease?
I think a primer would be that we're going to look at the transparency. A lot of things that we do are public records, but you have to FOIA them. We think that putting those out in a forward-facing way would let the public know more about us without having to FOIA, because an absence of information is almost never filled with good things. If there's a vacuum of information, it's almost always filled with negativity. Law enforcement could do better at that, so we're going to look at ways to do better than that. And maybe an expansion of what we're already doing with our MIS team, our mental health support team. Some expansion there, but I think you're going to see a lot more transparency and a lot more of us answering with policy and practice some of the community concerns.
All right, let's see if I can cover a couple of quick questions from listeners, one on Facebook. Are there any plans for weekly drug testing of all Pima County Sheriff's deputies?
We already do random testing. It's not weekly, but it is random testing. That's part of what we do already.
All right. Sue has called us. Sue, what is your comment, please, for the sheriff?
Hi. I have two burning questions. One is, if an elder dies in a nursing home situation, and the family believes that he died, or their elder died under suspicious circumstances, and they approach the sheriff's department, do they get are they entitled to an autopsy and a tox screen? That's one question. The second question is, how do you handle warrants that have been quashed?
Okay. Sue, a two-part question. Autopsies and then warrants that have been quashed, Sheriff.
Well, your first thing is a hypothetical question, and I hate to say it depends on circumstance, but at some degree it does. If an elderly person passes away while under medical care, generally speaking, a doctor would sign the death certificate as cause of death, which would generally negate the need for an autopsy. If there is other indicia that something happened, that there was maltreatment of the person or other things that would raise suspicions, that might trigger an autopsy and a broader investigation. But I hate to say it depends, but in that case, it depends on very specific circumstance. With respect to quashing the warrants, I'm not sure I understand the question. When a warrant is quashed, it's removed from the system, so it should not reside there any longer. There is a certain period from which the court would quash the warrant until it's updated in the system, but once the warrant is quashed, it comes out of the system as an alert for a deputy.
All right, let's go to Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com. Dylan.
You know, I don't have a specific burning question right now. I was trying to think of how to follow up on some of those, but I think you gave some pretty comprehensive answers. Maybe we could, I know you're starting to run out of time here, Bill, but maybe we could talk about your campaign a little bit.
My campaign right now, to be honest, is to be a very good sheriff for this county. That's taken all my time. If I have to do one thing very well and neglect to some degree another, I'm going to be a very good sheriff. And right now that is consuming about 60 to 70 hours of my work week. And that's what I'm focused on. I know it may sound trite, but we're doing the things we can on our campaign. And I'd like to serve this county for another 4 years. And it's up to the voters whether that happens or not. I've tried to be a very balanced sheriff. I know I'm a Republican, and that is off-putting to some people. But I have a very progressive education, and I think that balances me. There isn't partisanship in this office, and anybody who thinks that there is misplaced. I don't believe there's partisanship in public safety. It's a community issue. It's a quality of life issue. It's a human condition issue. It's not a Republican issue or a conservative or a progressive issue. And we shouldn't approach our duties as law enforcement professionals with that partisan ideology. So I abandon that completely. I try to look for what's good public policy, and sometimes that looks a little left. Sometimes it looks a little right. I tell my wife the funny thing about being a guy in the middle is you get matching black eyes. You're always balanced. Somebody hits you on the left and somebody hits you on the right. But maybe that means you're doing what you're supposed to be doing.
You've kind of hit from below too as well. You've had several of the employee groups that represent various portions of the sheriff's department come out against you.
I'm holding people accountable. And that's what they elected me to do. As much as I like to be an affable guy, my job is not a popularity contest. We're going to hold people accountable, move the agency forward, take care of some of the things that was left to me. I kind of inherited a hot mess, and I'm working to fix that. And some people will find that a little disquieting, and that's not to be unexpected. If you're a person bringing about change, and nothing happens, and nobody's crying a little bit, I would wonder if you're really bringing about the change that you were elected to do.
All right. We are out of time. Richard, I'm just going to kind of summarize from what you wanted to talk about, the militarization of police. Let's see if we can get the sheriff to comment on that, because that's usually one of the knocks that come up, that let's defund law enforcement. They're just far too military.
You know, I share your concern about the appearance of the militarization of police. We are not a military branch. The other thing that Dylan and all of us ought to be concerned about is the nationalization of police. And that is a lot of what's being talked about in reform efforts. And we should all pique our interest to that, because a lot of these efforts of having national standards, of national accreditation, is a movement toward nationalization of police, and that should be something we should all be concerned about. But there are certain aspects that appear to give the appearance of military equipment that are fundamental to us doing our job. Some of these rescue vehicles that are paramilitary in appearance are absolutely necessary for us to do rescues of people, to go into areas, and to do so safely. So we try to avoid the appearance of militarization all we can, but some of that equipment is fundamentally necessary to us doing our job. But we should keep our eye on this idea of nationalized standards, nationalization of police, because we might be comfortable under the current administration, or maybe not, but three administrations down the road, what will those standards look like? We should be concerned about that.
And just some historic perspective, the anti-cop movement is not something that's really new. It goes all the way back to the mid-1800s with the anarchists. My hometown of Chicago, one of the blackest days was the Haymarket Square massacre in 1886. Seven cops killed. That was kind of there was an anarchist convention representing 16 states in 1886. In Chicago. And then in the 60s, some of the groups involved in the 60s had some of the anarchy underpinnings. It's not new, Sheriff.
No, Bill, and let me share a little personal story. When I was a little kid, I always knew I wanted to be a cop. And when I became a teenager in the 70s, I would tell my buddies, we'd be talking about what we wanted to do. And I'd say, you know, I think I want to be a cop. And, you know, at that time in the vernacular, my buddies, teenage buddies, would say, man, what do you want to be a pig for, man? I hate pigs.
Yep. That's
and
very
I,
much 1960s.
And I said, well, why do you hate pigs? And they say, because this one cop one time, man, did fill in the blank. And I thought, if you could not be the one cop one time, what difference could you make? Because almost everybody, if you listen to them, they'll say, this one cop one time, if we could aspire not to be the one cop one time, we could make a hell of a difference in our profession. And I've tried to do that for about the last 38 years.
All right, Sheriff Napier, thank you very much,
Thank
sir.
You, my friend. Thanks, Dylan.
Thank you, Dylan. Stick around, okay?
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on this June the 19th. Tomorrow is the first day of summer. And as I posted on my Facebook page yesterday, Dylan Smith of TucsonSentinel.com, I received in the mail yesterday, kind of made my day, the first calendar of already looking ahead to 2021. And it just made me feel better that we were halfway through this year, the year that keeps
How's
on
giving. That even possible?
The year that keeps on giving and giving mostly bad things, Dylan.
My calendar says it's March 237, so I don't know where you're getting this first day of summer thing.
Oh, my gosh. Let me begin with the governor's news conference this week. My take on this, Dylan Smith, is that here the governor a couple of weeks ago issued a first ever for the state of Arizona statewide curfew. At the time, I thought it would have been more appropriate for the Phoenix metropolitan area and Tucson, and not so for the rest of the state. Now, this week, the governor says we're not going to have a statewide mandatory mask issue or proclamation, instead leaving it up to individual jurisdictions. I thought it would have made more sense, Dylan, just go with a statewide proclamation. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, we know that this is a disease that's spread amongst people, that certainly it's more concentrated in urban areas. But look at the fact that one of the worst outbreaks anywhere in the world is on the Navajo Nation.
Yep.
It's not just a problem in cities. And so it does get spread in rural places where perhaps even more readily when people are not practicing social distancing very well and not close to healthcare. So it can potentially pop up anywhere in this state, and trying to put the genie back in the bottle once it starts is the hardest thing, which we've seen as we've watched this develop over the past several months. If we would have locks down earlier and harder to begin with, we might well be past most of this. We've seen that in several countries around the world that effectively lock things down very, very quickly. They are pretty much, at least at this point, and done with COVID-19. New Zealand has had, 3 new cases in a week in the entire country.
Yeah.
If you compare that to what's going on here, it's a dramatic difference. And if people don't take it seriously, and if we don't really, wear our masks, wash our hands, keep our hands away from our face, keep our distance from each other in public, and still stay at home as much as possible, we have to give up some luxuries for a while to make it stop. Otherwise, it will continue. It'll continue to get worse. The more we spread it around, the more people there are out in public who are infected and maybe don't even know it and spreading it around.
The hotbed areas you mentioned, the Navajo Reservation, Coconino County is another hotbed in the Flagstaff area. The El Centro California Yuma area, I believe, leading the nation as far as cities with per capita the most new cases. Your thoughts?
I think we're going to see over the next month, likely new severe outbreaks in places around the country where you might expect, especially as people are, so many people are starting to think that we're done with it. They're bored with it. They don't want to be cooped up anymore. They're not taking it seriously. And they're just getting out and trying to go about their lives as if it were a year ago. And right now we just can't do that.
Lauren has called us with a comment about the way the virus, the pandemic, is being handled. Go ahead, Lauren.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. I wanted to provide something not so much as a counter argument, but a different perspective. I heard, as much as I was able to listen to radio, my number one news sources, a couple of scientists. They were not novelists. They weren't fiction writers. These scientists came from pretty credentialed universities, and over the last 2.5 months or so, the first argument or position I heard from this one lady scientist was, if you could achieve 51% of exposure, in other words, 51% of the general population could be exposed, is going to be the only thing that moves you toward resolution or finalization. Another scientist had said something similar. She was also a lady. She said, you're going to have 2/3 of the general population exposed before you can reach a resolution or finalization. And I think the expression for that is herd immunity. Am I right about that?
Well, that's the expression. And a lot of people have been talking about herd immunity as it relates to COVID-19. But what we need to remember is there are many viral diseases which we never achieved herd immunity for. We never achieved herd immunity for measles or for polio or for any coronavirus. And especially with coronaviruses, we've never had a vaccine for them. We only managed to make polio and measles go away through widespread vaccination programs. It didn't go away until then. It remained a threat. And, if you're talking about trying to expose half of the U.S. population or 2/3 or 80%, a lot of people are tossing around different numbers, you're basically talking about millions of people dying. Back in March, there was Republican Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, talking about how, it'll only have severe effects and maybe only 3.4% of the U.S. population will die. That's 11.5 million people. Trying to say that herd immunity should be our goal. Sweden pretty much tried that. They've now got the highest per capita COVID-19 death rate of any country in the world. It's, not very much a goal at this point. If we have any kind of goal, it's to put all of our resources into making sure that people don't catch it right now, so that the people do catch it can still get adequate care and maybe save some of them. You know, we have to keep the curve flat. That wasn't a one-time deal. And we got to come up with a vaccine or an effective treatment.
Hey, Dylan, quickly running out of time, wanted to switch to an issue that a topic that has gotten virtually no publicity, and you know what it is. It's the elections coming up. Early ballots, Dylan, go out in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, it's really coming up, and there are some primary races out there.
Yeah.
In any other year would be getting a little bit more attention, and we've got, candidates who can't campaign in the usual way. We've got, reporters like us who can't report on them in the same way we've always had. You know, trying to have debates with Zoom meetings has kind of been, not the best way to handle that. It's certainly a different way of trying to approach things. And, and this is the first year of the new election calendar in Arizona, where the election is, 3 weeks earlier than it has been?
Yes, it is.
Time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I want to...
You go back about, 20 years ago, we had our primaries in, late September? Or
no.
I mean, it was...
Oh, Labor Day, right before Labor Day. Yeah. I think it was last Tuesday in August.
But we moved it, but before that, it was later than that.
Oh, you're right. Actually, it was.
We did move it up. The August date was the early
date. Mid-September.
The first Tuesday in August.
Yeah.
It's so ballot, and then you have more people who are voting, early voting by mail, a majority now. So the idea that this election will take place in August, it's going to be over well before then.
Let me make a quick plug. This is 3 weeks from today, the 10th of July. We'll have all three of the Pima County Democratic candidates. There's no Republican candidate for Pima County attorney. So the winner there is going to be the new Pima County attorney. And then we have the following week, the three CD2 Republican candidates. So we'll do our part here to try to introduce people to these folks before the final election balloting is done.
And when we should remind people that voter registration deadline is going to be earlier this year as well. If you want to vote in the primary, you need to be registered to vote before those first early ballots get sent out.
Yep. All right, Dylan, thank you very much. Dylan at TucsonSentinel.com. Appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Take care of yourself.
Thanks a lot. You too. All right, let's welcome Weekend Watch. That's coming up next with Mr. Matt Russell. It's Buckmaster on a Friday. We'll be right back.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
The current Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to identify priority projects based on public input. RTA member jurisdictions will submit their respective project lists by June 2020 for the CAC to consider for a future plan. To learn more, visit www.rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Let's say you need an honest roofer. Where do you start? Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona has more than 3,200 accredited businesses ready to help and committed to doing things right. Next time you need a trusted mechanic, plumber, AC company, or florist, go to our website, bbb.org, or call us at 520-888-6161. Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona. We are here to help you find local companies you can trust.
All right, baby, stir it up. I am ready for the weekend. Weekend Watch with Matt Russell is presented by Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive from Tucson. You know the Buckmaster Show guarantee. 10 degrees cooler over in Silver City, and today it's 83 degrees at midday. The low tonight, 58. So we're well inside that. That's about a 15-degree difference now in the high over in Silver City. So if you want to cool off, first place to check out southwestnewmexico.org for the where to stay and what to do. Lots of outdoor recreation. Let's welcome now award-winning Tucson publicist, Inside Tucson Business Food and Beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Time to break out the old Speedo here in Tucson, Matt.
Yeah, talk about stirring it up. The weekend has begun.
Boy, that would do it. Hey, what's going on over at Main Gate Square? Are they starting to crank it up again?
They sure are. You know, it's that annual summer music series. They're called Friday Night Live. It kicks off tonight at 7:30 in Geronimo Plaza there with a jazz performance under the stars. Everybody gets free parking tonight, Bill, in the Tyndall Avenue Garage. So I say come early and grab a bite at any one of the local restaurants up and down University Avenue. Now, one of the newer restaurants to open is Baccio Italiano. And they're going to be offering $10 specials this evening. Then after dinner, just walk across the street, assume your social distance position, and enjoy the concert. It sounds like fun.
This is the weekend we honor our fathers.
Indeed. And, you know, lots of dining opportunities again this year. For those who want to treat the old man in the comforts of his own home, I say check out the Father's Day Mixed Grill To-Go package from Contigo Latin Kitchen, of course, up at La Paloma. Now, this bad boy comes with 22-ounce ribeyes, two of them. That's 44 ounces of beef, Bill.
What?
Plus two bone-in lamb chops, grilled chorizo, grilled corn, a green salad, a huge serving of chimichurri sauce to dip and dunk. You're also going to get a liter-sized bottle of Cabernet Sauvignon. This mixed grill package should feed a family of six, they say, all for just $250. So you can earn some points from Pop this Sunday. Call 299-1540 to reserve your Sunday takeout feast from Contigo.
I understand that beef has its own zip code. It's Solar. another quick dine out opportunity on Father's Day.
Yeah, for those who want to venture out for Father's Day dinner, I think Bob's Steak and Chop House at the Omni Tucson National, they check all the boxes for Dad's Day. The bar is going to await the big guy with a monstrous martini to kick off the night, followed by other big things that all dads demand. There's a ribeye there that's so big it hangs off the side of the plate. After dinner, I'd say go out on the patio. It's the perfect destination for Dad, where he can feel free to light up a premium cigar while sipping some scotch against the backdrop of a Frank Sinatra soundtrack. Pinch me, I'm dreaming. This is my kind of Father's Day at Bob's Steak and Chop House.
This is a big boy edition here, a weekend watch, I'll tell you. What's
for
in
sure.
the, what do you have in the column in Inside Tucson Business?
Well, you know, there are those who think that the gulf between Tucson and Phoenix is really more than geographic, but there's a Tucson brewer who recently bridged this gap with beer, or what he calls the Great Uniter, and my sudsy story about this solidarity is in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Happy Father's Day to all those wonderful fathers. Matt, have a great and safe weekend, buddy.
Cheers to you, too. Thanks, Bill.
Original theme music for the Buckmaster Show, composed by our friend Chris Stefan. Thanks to Rosemary Brandt, my assistant, who makes sure all of our programs are ready on the podcast. John Couch, engineering and producing. The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of the program. On behalf of the entire team here at Bustos Media in Tucson, all of us wishing you a very safe and pleasant Father's Day weekend.